The ACN podcast is made possible thanks to the generosity of our listeners and sponsors, including the Agile Alliance. As a nonprofit membership organization, the Agile Alliance is an excellent resource to help you along your Agile journey. To learn more about the Agile Alliance and our other sponsors, as well as how you can become a sponsor or supporter of our show, please visit acnpodcast.org for more information. And thank you for your support. Good morning and good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Agile Coaching Network. This is the 89th episode. So we've been around for a number of years. I don't know if we're the oldest podcast that's in the Agile space, but we are one of the older ones. We come to you every month with a live event where we do the recording session of this great set of topics that we do. We try to mix it up as we go through every month. And overall, it's because of the support that we get from the Agile community that's enabled us to survive as long as we have, which is really good. I appreciate, by the way, all the comments that come in from after the live event or anyone sends me a comment throughout the month. And I just wanted to bring up one thing because as I go through the opening dialogue, the format has shifted over time, but it starts off with me talking about a particular subject, getting the conversation's blood flowing in everyone. And then we also do a couple of plugs in the very beginning because we are a sponsor-supported podcast. So I know there was a comment that came in last month, and I just wanted to directly just make sure that everyone was level set in a couple of things, which was we were talking about some events that were coming up, and we're talking about some things that we think are of interest to this group of people. And also we were pointing out our sponsors and making sure that our sponsors get some coverage because that's how we pay for the podcast and all those systems. I just wanted to level set that because we're not here for profit making. We're here to give back to the Agile community. But we do have some responsibilities to our sponsors, and that's some of the things that we do. I'm joined every month by a set of co-hosts. Some of the co-hosts are not here this week because of other obligations that they have. Again, the hazard of moving it by 1 week because we were at Agile Open Northwest last week, as well as some other learning events. So my brain is absolutely full, and some of the topics that we're talking about today is some of the outcomes from that. But I'm joined normally by Shauna, Diana Larson, Jorg, Sheila Eckhart, also Sheila McGrath and Hendrik. And of course, all of you, you are a part of this community, and we'd love to hear from you as well. Co-hosts, we couldn't do the show without you. Again, tremendous people, great Agile coaches and great business leaders, and they give a lot of good contrast ideas and experience to the conversation. I want to remind everyone to please subscribe to the podcast. We currently toppled over 200,000 people who've listened to the podcast library, which thank you for all of you who listen to it offline and don't get a chance to come to the live events. And also thank you again to all of the sponsors and supporting members of New Agility, because New Agility is the social enterprise that produces the show. Thank you so much for your support. I do want to make one plug, New Agility, for the members. We are having a purpose-driven design workshop that's going to be on April 22nd and 23rd. Purpose-driven meaning that when you step into doing Agile, if you're looking at like just the off-the-shelf frameworks and that doesn't fit for your workload, we're going to spend a couple of days talking about how we can mix a new methodology and pull from the multiple different things that we have available to us in order to do that. So if you're interested in that, you can go to New Agility's newsletter that should be coming out this week, or probably realistically on Monday, or you can go to newagility.com and go take a look at that and please register for that. So Agile Open Northwest, for people who don't know about this event, and Diana, you're here too, so you can also help give contrast because you've been a part of that organization for a long time as well. It's probably one of the oldest open space Agile events that is in the country. And it happens here in Portland, Oregon, where I live. So I'm incredibly lucky that now that it's back live again, I got the chance to go to the event last week and did some of my own personal learning, as well as ran a few sessions because as people know me, I love to share some of the things that I learned over the years. And Agile Open Northwest, as it's been running, it's interesting to see as it's coming out of the pandemic. And there were some trends that I saw there that I wanted to talk about and get this conversation going with this sort of concept about whether or not we're in the Agile backslide. Are we took three steps forward, and now are we taking steps back? So some of the trends that I saw, and these are people who were attending some of my sessions and some of the other sessions, is that Agile over its 20 years has been, it's grown wide, but not deep. That was a common thread, which is Agile to a point. Maybe you've got a good team of 12 that's doing it, but if you look at other portions of your organizations, they're struggling or they have adapted it to the point where it almost is not Agile anymore, which kind of goes into the second thing that I saw, which was personal development budgets. As since we came out of COVID, a lot of organizations, especially high-tech companies, have really reduced the amount of dollars that they're giving to professional development. The trend that I saw here and also at other events is that people are starting to have to pay out of their own pocket in order to enhance their skills in the space in this area, which was something that I saw, which to me, I think as a former director of a Fortune 100 company, I could tell you that the one thing that was for me, I knew that especially in a downturn or other situations, because this is something Andy Grove put into me because I was a longtime Intel person, was is you need to retool your organization. And if you're in a downturn and you're not in that heavy, got to get it out the door at a particular time, maybe it's a little bit less because of just where the market's depressed, that's the time to retool. But the trend that we saw at Agile Open Northwest, as well as at other events that I've been to, is that people are, they're just not receiving those dollars from their company. The other one was, if you think of the laggers within the Agile community, some of them have come up, but if you go look at Agile is not being perceived as, and this was an interesting comment somebody made, not being perceived as the thing that you use to do maximum efficiency within your business. And it gets you some boost of efficiency. But if you think of in the early days of what Agile was trying to do, it really wasn't being marketed as an efficiency tool. It was a way of how do we build continuous learning into organizations. And I think there was a certain point where you might have looked at that and said, but yeah, what about the efficiency of my organization? And you saw the sales pitches switch over to 20x improvement or 400x improvement and all those things. And I think a lot of those promises, I guess you can say, some of them came true for some companies and other ones they didn't. And I think that's also feeding into, well, what's the kind of the next thing? Because what we're looking for is how do we now squeeze 20 people's worth of work into 4 people? Or how do I do that? And they're looking for like methodologies to do that. The last one, which I almost made the topic for today, about this role combining stuff going on, which is people are saying that they're not valuing Agile coaches as much, and we're more valuing product managers. And I'm seeing like this trend of no longer product owners, but going into PMs. And debatably, most product owners, if you use Scrum, never really got fully empowered to be the decision maker within the organization. They became more of a PM, spending most of their time in Jira or other tools, looking at delivery trends and being micromanagers, not really focused on customer value. I think overall, just as we get into the kickoff questions, I think that these signs going across are very common. They're not something that suddenly you stumble into and you go, oh, that one company is having these issues. We're seeing this systemically across our industry today. And Agile Open Northwest put into my brain about 15 different articles I need to go write, but also it started to, you know, reemphasize a couple of things around what is going on in our industry. Our industry is just looking for new buzzwords. I think a lot of Agile has gotten repackaged over the years. Some people dubbed as the Agile, what is it, industry or the industrial complex, just taking phrases and just adding a new word in front of it, like Ray Scrum or something. I don't know. You just some of the things I'm talking about where they just re-adopted Scrum patterns and then put something in front of it and then they certify you on it. And what are the big companies looking for? Which I think is which is an interesting question to look at as well. So to kick this off, do you see the trends in your company specifically? Or if you're a consultant, do you see this in the industry itself? And do you feel that this is a right or wrong move, that some of this backsliding or recombination of roles and other things is okay? Maybe this is a course adjustment that Agile, as it's becoming more institutionalized in organizations, maybe this is something that should be happening. Or you might feel that, no, this is the wrong move. This is getting away from what we tried to originally do when the manifesto was written and what we were trying to empower teams to do. How do we get self-organization going within, you know, companies and all of those things? If those principles are no longer needed, or are they just feeling outdated for whatever reason, maybe this is a correct move. But I'd like to hear your perspective on it. And then the last one is, if you feel it is the wrong move, what actions as a community we should be taking? I'm going to stop right there. And I'm going to say, Diana Larson, you were there last week. I know you were a butterfly for most of the Agile Open Northwest, but I know you were having like really deep conversations. So I'd like to get your perspective on this first.
Yeah, I really was having a lot of deep conversations. It was awesome. And just to say, Agile Open Northwest is the oldest open space Agile conference in North America. There were a couple of earlier ones in Western Europe, but we were the first in the U.S., and I was one of the founders, along with Rebecca Werfsbrock and Charlie Poole. So just for that piece of history, the first one was in 2007, and we're still going strong, so that's cool. About the topic here, people started asking me if Agile was dead in 2005. Because I wrote a whole little article, because I was part of the Agile Alliance board then, and I wrote a whole little article about, not yet. No, I don't think so. And certainly it's had a robust life since then. On the other hand, there is this diffusion of innovation curve kind of thing, right? There is this, the crossing the chasm issues and those kinds of things that seem to be just a part of an economic marketplace in the way organizations think about things and leaders think about things. And I don't know that it's a human thing, but maybe it's a human in large groups thing. I don't know, that kind of adopting some new perspective or some new set of behaviors. But one of the things that the drum that I've been beating a little bit is, this may be just a natural progression, along with marketing or whatever else. It's just a natural progression of how humans adopt behaviors. But that doesn't mean that we shouldn't stop and notice what kind of valuable contribution has been made. And I think people forget to do that. They're like, oh, everybody's upset. Oh, there's the Agile Industrial Complex. Oh, it's all fragile. It's not Agile anymore, and so on. But wait, what are the positive things that we want to focus on that we want to ensure that we keep? Nobody really talks about total quality management or the Shingo Prize or any of those kinds of things very much anymore. But we all still care about customer satisfaction. And that was a huge piece that the whole Japanese management and aligned movements brought to us. We still want to look at what is the course of our value stream, value chain. It's had a number of different names over the years, before in the TQM and then in business process reengineering, and now. That's a thing that's still useful to look at. How does work flow through our organization? And that's been a thing Agile has emphasized as well. So I think it's important that we look at that. I think while a lot of people don't use all the practices, I think another thing that the Agile Manifesto has focused on is we have a much better idea of how to deliver software through teams than we had before 2000. And whether we use all those practices or not, or whether we actually follow through on all the principles and suggestions, still there is an understanding now of what works if you really want your teams to be delivering that wasn't present before. And that's not going to go away. So are there new things on the horizon? And are there folks who are snake oil salesmen in the Agile space? Both are true. And I'm particularly interested in some of the ideas that are coming out of Quentin Quartel in the fast, fluid, adaptive scaling technology techniques, where they've put a lot of the related ideas in Agile together and have moved that along. So I don't know if it's a wrong move. I think it's maybe an inevitable move that people would be after 20 some years. Actually, the founders, the signers of the Agile Manifesto started talking about their ideas in the mid-90s. They were in the early 90s, they were sharing those ideas at Uppsala and other conferences. So that writing the Agile Manifesto was a certain action at a point in time that gave it a name. And it's been over 20 years since then. It's not right or wrong, but it is typical that we should be seeing the kind of shifts that we're seeing. And do I wish everybody was getting the benefits that they could be getting? Oh boy, do I. And do I expect that's going to happen universally? Not at all. So I think we just need to focus on where have we moved things forward? The actions our community should take is let's notice where have we moved the conversation forward, particularly those of us who were working before 2000. Folks who've joined the community since, maybe there's a history lesson in this for you. You are no longer sleeping under your desks for 80 hours a week or whatever. Anyway, that's my view on a lot of this.
I sure hope people are, because I used to sleep under a lab bench when they were delivering first silicon and all of that. And I can tell you, that environment was self-reinforcing, meaning that I don't remember any manager one time coming up and saying, you need to be here all night. I think that personality is involved in all that. So I'm curious. And so one, I was with that. You had earlier before Agile up in Northwest, you had the FAST little summit. And I thank you for inviting me to that because I gained a lot about that. And what I thought about that, and I ran something else at the Agile Open Northwest. I almost a Wardley map, I called it, and because it wasn't an official Wardley map, and I didn't want to, the people who really knew it, I didn't want to make sure that they knew it was not the full method. But I just really wanted to go look at what was visible, very visible within the environment, what was invisible to the greater community, and also thinking about what was genesis to the perspective of things that are new, maybe hidden, maybe something that's very visible and can be, that's being talked about a lot, all the way down to what is a commodity. And I think, and maybe I'd love to hear your perspective on this, is do you think that the things that are now a commodity today, going and taking a Scrum class as an example, do you think that maybe some of the release that's occurring is not really a backslide, but more or less now some things are getting oxygen and we're hearing more about them, like things like FAST?
It could be. It could very well be. There's always going to be people, there will always be people who are seasoned in the ideas and the community and so on. And so things may start feeling outdated and stale to them. There are always going to be people who are brand new to it and where it's going to feel like a really fresh idea because they've entered the community at a later stage and everywhere along that continuum. And that happens also, I think, in large organizations at organizational levels where engineering team members may be very excited about an idea long before the upper level leadership in the organization recognizes it and sees its possibilities or so on. It's expecting everyone to go through an idea change at the same pace, on the same cadence, in the same time frames, I think is unrealistic. We want everybody to be the same place we are. And have that perspective on the work. And I just don't think that's realistic. It's not who we are as humans.
Sure.
Yeah.
And maybe just the standpoint of just getting the noise up on all those new things.
I think
one of the things that was interesting is a trend, and we'll move past this in a second, but I noticed there's a lot of new speakers at some of the events that are coming out for this year. And I really think that's great to start to see the new blood get out there and share their perspective, I think is just outstanding.
Yeah.
So Sheila, hey, welcome.
Hi. How are you?
I'm doing good. It's been a few months. I'm glad you're back with us. So what's your perspective on all of this?
So this is such an interesting topic to me because
I have been hearing a lot of this. As a consultant, I hear this from a lot of clients. There are a lot of people that feel that Agile is done. My perspective on Agile might be different than what a lot of people think, because I look at Agile as using these tools and processes to make yourself more efficient, right? To make your teams more efficient, but also more effective. And I've always said efficiency, effectiveness, the ability to pivot are the three big pillars that I always look at when I'm working with a client. And in order to do that, there are a lot of different practices and things you can put in place. And not every framework works for everybody. The frameworks are, again, to me, a tool and a toolbox. What works, what doesn't work. The idea of following a framework in its strictest sense could help, but it could also hinder. So there's a lot to be done there. And this is why Agile coaches are needed, if looking at it in that perspective and not as an Agile coach, I'm there to make sure you're doing Scrum right. Because that's definitely things that I have seen from certain Agile coaches that feel that their role there is to ensure that teams are adhering to the rules versus individuals and interactions over process and tools. So I don't think that it's the right move or the wrong move. I think that there's a misunderstanding, and the right move is to correct the understanding, like to correct the idea that we have to be doing Scrum, that we need a Scrum Master and a product owner and a, which you might need, but I'm not sure that's necessarily true. I don't think that Agile coaches are outdated, but I think a lot of companies feel that way. Mm-hmm. I've also heard a lot about product. So you talked about product managers being valued more than Agile coaches. And I have heard that as well. I have heard companies looking for product coaches, not Agile coaches. They want to know how they can become a better product organization.
Now, is that a better name in general? We always said Agile was never the destination. It was about creating value, maybe a value coach.
Yeah, I do see a lot from a lot of the bigger companies looking for product coaches. They're looking for product operating models. They're looking for understanding what a product organization is, how to put in a product structure within. And I feel that's kind of part of the movement from the more of the higher ups. The leadership is moving toward that more so than we need an Agile transformation.
Interesting. And
but it all goes hand in hand.
And I've seen the same trend. There's a number of, it was interesting, some of the mix that I've seen in some of the attendees, and some of them are the people who are trying to rethink how it is they make themselves marketable. And there was a group of coaches there that were trying to, in fact, try to find that edge. How do they market themselves in this kind of newer world that's here, which is interesting stuff. So Scott, you have your hand up. What do you have on this?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Oh, we definitely can. Welcome, Scott.
Great. Thank you. Yeah. So I was just thinking after listening to everyone so far, and I've heard a lot of the same comments that everybody else has, is Agile's dead, or Agile's outdated, or Agile hasn't evolved over the last 20 years. And then I asked the question of, okay, if not Agile, what would take its place? What do you suggest? And they don't have an answer other than to go back to the same old SDLC waterfall approach, which I'm like, we've all been there, done that. And we know that Agile is much more humane way of operating and thinking about developing software. And then I hear things like Scrum's too prescriptive. I'm like, all right, let me ask you this. If we set frameworks aside, what do you think about continuous improvement? What do you think about learning organizations? What do you think about teams getting closer to the customer? Oh, that's all good stuff. That's agile. Now, what do you think about agile? Oh, well, I didn't really think about it like that. Just my two cents.
No, I love that, Scott. I absolutely love that. I agree wholeheartedly with what you're saying there. And that's frameworks aside, here are some values on that that help you be agile. What do you think about these?
Yeah, it's really taking that kind of Kanban thought of meeting teams where they're at. And they may not be ready for some framework. All right, can we have some kind of a retrospective every so often and look at our system and how it can be better? So you forget about labeling yourself anything. If I'll take an old SDL waterfall team that is continuously trying to improve versus the Scrum team that never has a retrospective because they think it's a waste of time.
I fully agree with that. One of the conversations that we had last week was about exactly that, which was the notion that responding to the retrospective, responding to continuously improving and being empowered to go do that, I think was something that always comes up as an anti-pattern to something that encourages those things. One of the things on the ultimate extreme too, and I'll relate this to what I learned about FAST last week, is if you suddenly then swing the pendulum from Scrum now being this, I don't know, it's just, we have the rules and you don't break the rules. And Scrum Masters are in that behavior group of you broke the rule. And so therefore you get a 2-point penalty. I don't know what. But you go to the opposite extreme of this is when you suddenly say that, look, as we're going to run the organization as a big team that comes together and we are going to go put like a marketplace because FAST uses the open space type of rules. It actually will go through and you say this big group of people, there's the marketplace. Here's our work that we have to accomplish by a certain date, self-organize and move forward. And that extreme, I think is, and I always noticed that when we got into the notions of the self-organization component, a lot of teams never learned that. And that's unfortunately an unfortunate thing for most organizations. They still have that need the product manager, need the manager, need those people to be basically stay on top of people and micromanage them. And I'm not sure if others have seen this trend as well. Did I do okay with that, Diana, as far as description of FAST? Is there anything else you want to add to that?
The other thing I would talk about is that, like I said, Agile has gotten really good at figuring out about delivery teams. It hasn't put as much focus, and that's why I think people are talking about product coaches and stuff on discovery. What is it that customers really need and what will they accept and how will they pay and all those kinds of things. And that is something that FAST is very focused on including is discovery, both at the product management and product development level, but also at the team level where people are available, are aware of new technologies and things like that, that might serve the customers better. And the more you can include teams in the information gathering around discovery and around what has already been learned, the better products they're going to build. So that's a point of view of FAST in addition to the construct or the way it's constructed. I think that that's a move in the right direction.
Oh, I think so. I think there's a lot of organizations that can benefit from that. I think that a number of people get isolated from these mysterious people called customers. And I think you do really need to hear that perspective. And I don't know why certain companies, and maybe someone has an answer for this, why is the company so uncomfortable with an engineer talking directly with a customer? I always find that kind of weird.
It's the old office space. I talk to the customers so the engineers don't have to. Remember that from the Office Space movie?
I'm a people person.
Yeah, and we all laughed even then. What do you mean? Yeah.
Which is funny. Steve, what's going on?
Hey, how's it going? I'm thinking about what's next. I look back in history. Structured design, like Constantine in the 70s. Then we had OO design in the 80s and into the early 90s. Boot Shed Al and the methodology wars of the early 90s. And then we had Agile appearing on the scene in the early double knots, and that the transition was around the late 90s, early double knots. But now we're seeing things like AI and ChatGPT and all sorts of other emergent technologies, I would say. And how is that changing Agile? And when I look at, and I put in the chat, we're doing a survey on conferences, the way we interact and meet and share knowledge has changed over the years. In the early days, the 70s, you had IBM Share. I don't know how many people on the call will remember those. And then into the 80s, Uppsala emerged as a vehicle for sharing OO design practices and methodologies. And then, of course, into the double knots, we had Agile, the Agile and XP emerged. One thing I'll draw a parallel to is Uppsala, which was the object-oriented programming system, language, and applications conference. It actually morphed into something called Splash. Stay relevant to that particular community, where OO was basically the way of doing things. And it became something, software in the service of humanity. And I wonder, and it took on a little broader perspective on, OO was no longer the de facto religion. It was a broader spectrum. And I'm wondering if we're going to see something similar with that, that Agile will actually morph into a broader set of values that are associated with how we work with customers, how we work with our development teams, which are now more global. And we have more distributed development. So anyhow, I'm babbling on here just to raise a few ideas and observations. Back to you, Ray.
I think what you bring out is interesting from the aspect of, if you think of, some people were like, oh, it's all shifting back to the program manager. But then I asked, what's the role and responsibility of this? Is it really the old school program managers when we were doing Gantt charts? Or is it something else? If you had to list the roles and responsibilities of this new role. And it was interesting that inside of that, they actually said it was, they needed to know how to do Agile. They needed to be able to coach Agile and other things. And that actually made me excited to think of, yeah, this role name resonates with management, but they're also now saying you need to be able to know and do these things. So that excited me. But I also thought to myself, is that more than one person's worth of work? And that's always a challenge.
I'll just mention that in the chat, I put another plug in for the survey, follow-up survey we're doing. And by the way, I'm also happy to share with anybody who wants it. With my colleague, Dennis Mansell, we're actually presenting a paper called Investing in Design at ICSI, which is the International Conference on Software Reuse, in a couple of weeks in Lisbon. And basically, our observation is that the old ways of education, where you took formal training and maybe coaching was limited to a couple follow-up sessions after training, there are really other multiple ways that large corporations and organizations can share and expand the knowledge they have of whatever practices they use. Happy to share that if anybody is interested.
I wish I was going to that event because it's sounding pretty darn cool. Alonzo, do you have something you want to add to that? You're welcome to join the conversation.
It is really interesting because I remember when I was learning Lean Six Sigma some years ago, more than some years ago. And all of a sudden, the company that I was working for said, forget everything. Design thinking and Agile are the future. And now, and in that particular company, it was very interesting because they were taking the Agile mantra, but were not applying it correct. I believe that over the years, the problem is not that Agile is old-fashioned or that it's not something that works. It's that normally organizations fail to distribute power. People love, especially when they're in a management position, love to keep their power. And Agile does take their power from them. And from my particular experience, And the main reason why Agile failed, and in this particular company, they had their version of Agile and their version of Scrum, and in a combination with Gambit. That made no sense for a lot of teams, but they still tried to apply it. And it's an issue. It's not, I try to see it from the perspective of power, how people is really enchanted by the possibility of better results, higher customer satisfaction, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, the marketing of Agile, that yes, you can get that with Agile, you can get that with Agile frameworks, but they are not willing to share the power. Mm-hmm. And everything comes down, and everything goes down from there. As someone said before, what's the next step? Since the beginning of the industrial era, people should be at the center of business. And since the beginning of the industrial era, engineers try to take out the human part of out of the equation and make them part of the machines. Agile puts people again in the center. And that is why a lot of people is against Agile or said it doesn't work because they want people to be part of the machine. And we are not part of the machine, Honduras. Doesn't surprise me that people try to kill Agile. But it doesn't surprise me either that there are no options because all people should be at the center of the business, not just part of the productivity session of companies. That is what I have to say.
Thank you. I think that I sort of seen that we went through a thought worker revolution about a decade ago, where thought workers were getting a little bit higher empowerment for the stuff that they do. But it seems to be maybe the trend of enabling the care and feeding of our thought workers. It seems to be them also on the backslide a little bit. Kimberly, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you.
Welcome.
Thank you. This is my first time attending one of these, and I'm really happy about this topic. For some reason, it's hitting home in a lot of ways. I've been coaching and consulting for probably the last 20 years, and I would say in the last 10 or so, I see this trend. And my last engagement, I was actually at the executive level at a pretty big media company. And I wasn't really surprised to see the problem still at their level, but it was confirming for me because the topic always seems to boil down to understanding roles and responsibilities. And I feel like that continues to be the biggest barrier to all the change efforts that us as coaches try to bring forth. I think that people keep getting caught up on what to call themselves or how their traditional roles will fit or evolve with change. And with change being as painful as it is, it seems to lead them to fear the change and then blame the frameworks for all their failures. And I think that's what's giving Agile the beating right now. And then you got people that are basically taking a class and then they're calling themselves a coach or an Agile coach, and they don't really have the human or the psychology side of people development in the value delivery. And I think a lot what I've seen is the coaches come in and they continuously tell people what they're doing wrong, which devalues all the efforts that they might have been putting into decade-long careers. And instead of telling them or helping them find a way to just basically meet people where they are and guide them accordingly. So I feel like we got behavior problems between people understanding the role of the coach, understanding where their role fits in a transformation effort. And then you've got coaches that are ruining it for other coaches because they just for the name of one or just for the sake of wanting to call themselves a coach, they're giving a bad taste to executives by constantly telling people that they're doing it wrong instead of guiding them. If that makes sense.
It does make sense. I think one of the things I observed it actually last week, it was almost like this old Bugs Bunny cartoon, if anyone's old enough to remember it, but these hats were falling from a plane or something, and they would land on either Elmer Fudd or Bugs Bunny, and then they would start to act like the hat. So if a general hat fell on, they suddenly became a general and all of that. And there was this one agilist, I've worked with him for a number of years, and he's now in a power position within the companies. And his title is more towards a director or vice president of an organization now. And I was noticing the change of the toolkit that he was using, the stuff he would normally use would be change management, being able to, as you said, help people to transition from where they are to where they need to be versus telling them what to do. And it was interesting that some of the language that was coming out of when he was talking was like, oh, you're now taking more of the authoritative thou shalt come over to this and no, we're not having a discussion about it. And I think that is interesting because I don't think we're tooling up even our own agile coaches to understand that if you were now in that power role, how would you do it? And I love what you just said about not invalidating where people are at. And I can tell you in my early career, I was there. I was like, okay, waterfall sucks and we're not going to go do it anymore. And these were all the flaws with it. Even though that I had written the corporate standard for the waterfall, I was part of the team that created the overall overarching standard for it. But we did spend a lot of time in the very early days of Agile badmouthing that stuff versus what it's one way of doing it. And improv roles, I'm not going to invalidate you, but we want to go start to do these things. That could also, I think, been in that trend, but please go ahead.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. I just wanted to piggyback on that because I have seen this same trend with coaches, and I feel that there's a little bit of irony in there that you're trying to get people to be less command and control by being command and control. And I see that often, as Kimberly was saying, with the invalidate, you're doing it wrong. Let me show you how it's done. And at that point, you're doing those behaviors that you're trying to help people move away from.
Interesting.
And yeah. I think that has caused a big friction within some of the companies when it comes to agile and agile coaches.
Well, I think it's we practice what we preach. I noticed that my own leadership style has shifted significantly from what I used to be as an expert leader. As an expert leader, I was telling people what to do. And as a moving towards synergistic-based leadership styles and other things. And it's very easy to slip back to those old, just tell somebody what to go do versus my job is to create an environment that we can thrive in. We should be able to drop in work and then people, because we hire really smart people and allowing that those teams to get together, I think it just becomes important. Some of the other things, by the way, from Agile Open Northwest that was like last week and as we wrap up, it was interesting to see what people thought was invisible in the environment, which was things that they felt that not getting enough oxygen. And it was things like some of the new hybrid roles that we just talked about, but also somebody put up a sticker about sort of the reemergence of a waterfall prime, which was, you know, if you're going to be, if you have to practice phase gates, specifically if you're a big manufacturer of maybe a medical device, that there was a resurgence of some of those things coming together again, which I thought was pretty cool to see that it was on the map. But I would love to have an event of just what's invisible type of thing and get new trends coming out through that. So we're approaching the top of the hour. I want to appreciate everyone for bearing with us that we had to go slide the live event recording by 1 week because of just making room for, I hate to say it, my personal learning. Our next live event recording will be on Friday, April 26th, and I look forward to seeing you all next month. The ACN podcast is for educational and informative use only. If you'd like to know more about the ACN community, please come up to acnpodcast.org and support our show.